Welcome to Folio, an actual play podcast about solo and epistolary TTRPGs. I'm your host, Seda, and I'm showcasing multiple possible experiences of self-paced games by inviting guests to play them alongside me so I can compile our stories together. You can support the show financially at patreon.com/foliopod or with a one-off donation at ko-fi.com/foliopod. This is the third and final episode of our games of This Is Where the Stars Died, a non-linear narrative war game of battles, bots, and body horror by Scott Malthouse. The other two Bastion commanders joining me in the fight against Basilisk have been Austin Ramsay and Briar Sovereign. You can find some links to their stuff in the episode description.
So conflict zone 8.
There are 3 conflicts remaining.
The 8th conflict. Ooh, I do think I'm past the halfway point. I think I'm going to implement the difficulty alteration. I don't know that I'm going to remove my last reinforcement because it would be satisfying to spend both, but I do think I'm going to say that from now on, if a king or an ace is the second element pulled, it's an automatic defeat. Obviously, like, doesn't mean a lot, because I've already spent at least 3 aces, but I don't know, just throw in a little more risk in here for fun. Let's do it.
Let's see what the 8th conflict is.
10 of hearts is my 8th conflict card.
4 of clubs.
Has the king of diamonds. This is where we were surrounded. That's been every conflict zone, frankly.
This is when they came from above. Ooh.
This is where we were captured. Ugh. Okay. Who do we assign to this?
I think I'd love to see the oath bearers taking out the second power crystal here. So I'm going to deploy my oath bearers. And I think that's also great because it makes sense that, like, Basilisk would be escalating tactics against people who are winning and doing what they should do.
I'm going to bring the Grail Fists in again just to make a mess of it in these last blue planets. Grail Fists are brutal with heavy armor. They are unhinged. Always good to have on your side.
Okay. So I got some ideas. This could be Shade Watch again, out on the fringes of the Force, looking for information, whatever they can get, and they get nabbed. Could be that the Valiant Lancers, after having conducted their plan to lead the worms away, are now far outside of the defenses provided by the rest of the Force, and they are captured. I think I like that one the most. The other one could be the tanks are too slow and get surrounded. But let's go with the Valiant Lancers. Shade Watch has had their chance, and they failed twice. The Valiant Lancers are feeling victorious. They've managed to take down these worms. But, unfortunately, the worms are as much a trap as the drones of the Lancers were. And the Lancers are swiftly surrounded and captured. Let's see what the resolution cards are.
First conflict card is a queen. So I'm going to wager that the second one will be lower. It was an 8 of diamonds.
First one is 3 of diamonds. I have been extraordinarily lucky with these draws, repeatedly getting cards that are either very low or very high. I'm going to bet that the next card is going to be higher. King of diamonds.
And my first conflict card is the King of Hearts. And if I'm going to stand any chance of a victory, I do kind of have to pull off some desperate stands here. A desperate stand being like pushing, but instead of naming the color, you must name the suit. This earns 3 victory points, defeat gains 3 defeat points. It's kind of a Hail Mary, but I'm looking at my board right now, and lower is looking pretty likely.
The next card is going to be lower, so I think I'm going lower again.
Third time's the charm, so I'm going to go lower.
But I'm feeling good about lower.
Lower has literally never failed me.
I'm feeling pretty confident about lower on this one.
So I'm going to go lower.
Lower has never failed me once.
So, the odds are with me there.
And the numbers look good.
Oh, we have a pretty decent mix of black and red cards on deck, but very few hearts overall. So I'm going to say lower, I'm going to say red, I'm going to say hearts. I'm going to get 3 victory points as I turn over.
But I'm feeling good.
The 9 of hearts, baby! We're so back, as they say. That's 3 victory points.
What are my elements? Queen of hearts, annihilate. And an 8 of diamonds. Grief. Cool. Okay.
Okay. So, the elements, the Three of Diamonds is Notice, and the King of Diamonds is Chaos.
So, our elements are King of Hearts, Pilot, and Nine of Hearts, the Truth. We're going to pilot the Truth. Okay.
Whew. So I do know they're going to take this power crystal out. Yeah. Okay. This is a victory. They take it out. I'm not sure how we're going to take the third one out because the Oathbearers are annihilated. Or at least enough of them are that it is no longer just like throw them at the third crystal and it will be taken out. It's going to take strategy and careful planning and whatever to take this third one out because this is when they came from above. All of our defenses were focused on the outside of the room, the outside of the base, the doors. And as soon as there's this wet, tearing sound, it occurs to several people simultaneously that it was classic folly to assume that Basilisk is only going to interface with us the way that a standard human would, that they would have to walk to a room and come into it. The roof of this room just opens, almost just like a sphincter, a muscle slurping open. And it doesn't even send in like special troops or anything. It's just meat bombs. They are just like these explosives that can crawl forward on their own. And they do. They're just arms and dynamite and gunpowder dragging themselves forward, falling in limply through the ceiling that opens up, grabbing onto things, grabbing onto ankles, onto people, trying to keep them in place. And they manage to get a lot of them just by sheer numbers. And then they explode. There's chain reactions. One explodes, all of them explode. And it does take the crystal out. But Basilisk is confident that, like, as long as we don't take the third one out, it can rebuild. And so it's worth it. They are just splattered. I'm trying to decide if I want to highlight the grief tag more, or if that is enough. I think the Oathbearers are described as highly focused and relentless, so I don't think that they're the type to be able to... They're not going to be stopped by their grief. It's not going to overwhelm them. They are going to keep moving. But I think that there is a particular horror to whatever this religious order is, the Green Man, as it says they venerate, to having their bodies taken by Basilisk and used for parts. Maybe it's an order that... I don't want it to be like... It's important to me, because of my personal ethics and interests, to not have it be like, ooh, organ donation is scary, or like different ways of interacting with corpses and death are ooky. And so it's like, I think that I would want to lean into like, Oathbearers don't necessarily have a reverence for a dead body, but they have like a ritualistic relationship to it, where it's like when somebody dies, we do specific things with their parts. We consume their organs, we treat their skin in a specific way, we carefully dissolve whatever's left with a chemical concoction, like an aquamation, and then it is placed in a very specific place to honor them. And so there is a specific grief and horror to these people about the idea that their bodies are just being destroyed and used by Basilisk, and especially at this volume. And so that will inform them going forward. But this is a victory. I know from the way I've been talking about it, it doesn't seem like it, but it is. I get a victory point from this. That's war, pretty much, I think.
Notice Chaos. The Lancers are surrounded by a multitude of Basilisk drone gunships. These hovering vehicles outweigh the Lancers by a great deal. They have 4 rotors to provide their flight capabilities, and they have armaments not unlike the Dragonhawks, missiles, and autocannons. They don't carry any transport space, instead reserving that for more firepower and sleeker, more maneuverable frames. But the Lancers notice that their airframes like all airframes, have to make a choice. Do you go for stability, or do you accept instability but gain maneuverability? And this drone design has made the gamble and taken instability and maneuverability, much like the Lancer's vehicles, their skimmer bikes themselves. And so, in spite of being surrounded, the Lancers strike. They dive and they swoop, and the drones give chase. The Lancers take chances. They fly through gullies and canyons, and they swoop upwards against sheer rock faces. The drone gunships pursue. They don't do anything as stupid as flying through gaps too small for their frames, but the hard braking wears on them. Their servos and their engines begin to tear from the harsh maneuvers that the Lancers are putting them through their paces as they attempt to pursue the skimmer bikes. And so the Basilisk forces against the Lancers slow. They become clumsy. They stumble. And that's when the Lancers strike. They pounce upon the ones showing the most wear first, like wolves upon a wounded deer, tearing it apart with their electric lances, striking the quad rotors, ripping them off, causing the gunships to crash to the ground until the gunships are forced to retreat or face the teeth of the Lancers. And the Basilisk knows when it's beaten, knows not to waste materials, and they flee back to the factory, which grows ever so slowly closer.
So I'm smushing together that this is where we were surrounded, the Grail Fists are here, pilot truth. I think this is some kind of, they were on some other mission, the Grail Fists, we'd sent them out to deal with something, maybe go crush a Basilisk outpost somewhere, but we were diverted to save like a crashed fighter jet, some kind of scouting ship that had come back and made a pretty rocky landing. But we spoke to the pilot, they were, you know, panicked by the crash. They were a little out of it, but they warned us that we were about to be surrounded, that this was a trap, the Basilisk forces were moving in. We took a chance and believed them. Aborted that mission, turned the Grail Fists around, and found we had to fight our way back, but through less than we might have needed to. We weren't quite as surrounded as we would have been if we'd fallen into the trap. And we managed to fight our way home. That's a victory of it compared to some of these other missions. I think survival on its own is a pretty big victory. And that brings me up to, what, 4 victory points? 4 victories, 7 defeats. You know, I just need to do that a couple more times. Everything will be fine if I can do that a couple more times.
Okay, so humanity has secured a victory here. But will it be a costly one, or will it be clear and free? Let's see the next conflict zone.
Our second to last conflict zone, number 9, is the 2 of spades.
9th conflict is the 5 of diamonds.
6 of clubs. This is where we fought the armored walkers.
This is where we were ambushed.
This was where they began to mimic. Oh god. I think this is probably gonna be those shade watches hopping on comms. But who are they talking to? Ooh. Let's check back in with those valiant lancers who got sent deeper into the base, who I think are still like, okay, well, shit, we're in here. Let's try and keep finding the router so at least we can like figure out what's going on.
This is why we were ambushed. Who is the most ambushable? I haven't used the tanks for a while. It could be tank time. I think it's tank time. This is the Avalonian tanks on this one.
We're getting close now. The factory is just over the next ridge. We know this. The Lancers can see it as they return to the column. And so, the Basilisk brings forth some of its heaviest defenders, armored walkers. We decided not to take our own heavily armored walkers, the siege walkers, because we felt that they would be too slow to keep up with the column. Will this be our undoing? What do we have to face off against these monstrosities? The Dragon Hawks have their autocannons and missiles, but we also need them to provide logistics and medical support for the column and the prisoners. Shade Watch will be no match. even if they weren't wounded already. The Valiant Lancers are a possibility, but they just had two back-to-back conflicts and likely need a breather. Could send in the Iron Knights, but I think it is time to throw metal against metal directly and have the Avalonian tanks confront these behemoths. Let's see how they do. The first conflict card is a Jack of Spades. I'm going to wager that the next card is lower. Four of Diamonds.
First conflict card is a Nine of Clubs. I'm going to guess that the next card will be lower.
So the Avalonian tanks were ambushed. A first conflict card is the Ace of Clubs. And I need to go check how aces work. An ace always counts as one. So it's going to be higher. I will not be pitching lower on this one. I do kind of have to make another desperate stand. So I'm going to be naming a color and a suit. But I have one reinforcement left. So.
And I think, because of math, I'm essentially guaranteed to win at this point. I was just checking if there was if you have this many more victory points, it's this type of victory or whatever, if there's tiers of it. But there aren't. It's just victory or defeat. And given that mathematically I have 6 victory points and 2 defeat and only 2 things left, it's really unlikely that I'll lose. For this one at least, I'm going to gamble. I'm going to do the desperate stand thing where I have to name the suit and I think whether it's higher or lower. So I've been making piles of cards by suit so that I can do some math for this.
I'm going to say higher. I'm going to say red. And I think statistically, I maybe need to go hearts again.
I've pulled 7 diamonds. I've pulled 7 clubs. I've pulled 8 hearts. I've pulled 6 spades. That is so close to even. That doesn't help me at all. Okay, maybe I'll just push because I'm giving myself homework for no reason anyway. Whatever. I'm going to choose just the middle. Or do I want to just commit to it? Okay, I do think it's going to be lower and I think it's going to be a black card. So I'm pushing.
So it's going to be higher. It's going to be red. It's going to be a heart. Love will save me.
Wow.
It is a 5 of spades.
So it was a king of diamonds. So it's both higher and a red card. And I have the difficulty rule of if a king or an ace is the second element pulled, it's an automatic defeat. Incredible. I'm going to call in my second reinforcement and pull another one.
I'm going to cash in that final reinforcement. And we're going to pretend that didn't happen. So this card, as I flip it, is going to be a heart that is higher.
No fucking way.
And it's a 3 of spades. So humanity is totally fucked. It's all my fault. That is 3 defeat points.
I pulled a king of hearts. So I pulled a king of diamonds, which is higher, and a red card, and a king, so an automatic failure. And then I called in a reinforcement, and I pulled the exact same problem, but it's the king of hearts. The universe said, hey, you want to play? Get fucked. That's so funny.
Okay, that is a pretty decisive victory, if we want to just go by the difference in card values.
That's a defeat, and it's a 2-point defeat, because I pushed. Okay, so, 6 victory points, 4 defeat points. I don't know why I'm like this. Let's get the conflict elements in here.
So, Jack of Spades as an element is defend, and 4 of Diamonds is ground. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Our forces are approaching the final ridge just before the factory. As we take the ridge, we see ahead of us the towering armored behemoths, one of the last lines of defense for the factory. These machines are shaped like massive armored scorpions. In place of claws, they have autocannons. In place of a stinger tail, powerful plasma throwers. Their legs crush boulders as they step forward. Initial fire from the Iron Knights and Shade Watch ricochets off of these things, too heavily armored for even their weapons. So they fall back. The Valiant Lancers need to rearm. Many of their lances broke in the last 2 conflicts, and their drones are all but expended. The Dragonhawks, as part of the logistics chain for this force, also need to hang back to rearm the other groups. And so, The Avalonian tanks rumble forward to the top of the ridge. They know their autoguns on the sides of the tanks are unable to pierce the heavy armor of these walkers. So instead, they set them as point defense cannons. They target the weaponry of the scorpions heading towards them. Not to pierce the weapons or to damage them really, but to knock their aim aside when they attack the tanks. It's not as effective as shooting missiles out of the air, but it can provide the Avalonian tanks glancing blows instead of direct hits when it counts the most. And that allows the tank gunner crews to focus their rockets on the bodies of these armored walkers. They fly through the sky like shooting stars and crash down onto the scorpions like thunderbolts. The first few blows merely rock the basilisk walkers. They stumble, they stagger, but they remain standing and continue their assault, approaching the ridge, hoping to overcome the Avalonian tanks and get at the rest of the force, which is currently resupplying and vulnerable. But the tanks stand their ground and continue their barrage, expending many of their rockets, and the scorpion's armor begins to crack and shatter and break. And those that stagger stop getting up. They stay down, unable to move. They raise their claws full of cannons pitifully. Their stingers twitch and try to aim, and the rockets continue to fall upon them, breaking even those minor remaining movements available to them. And the tanks are victorious. They've broken one of this last line of defense of the factory. It's just ahead. It's so close. They can see individual people. They can see the gears of the factory. Almost. Almost.
Nine of clubs is a repair. The King of Hearts is creature. This is where they began to mimic. Yeah, as I said, I can't believe I pulled two kings. It's so funny. Two red kings. The Shade Watch troops who were taken over hop on the comms. Oh, and it's... So it is the Shade Watch troops, but I think because they have, like, the Valiant Lancers who they took over in the initial attack, they're able to, like, use their voices and, like, call signs and stuff to just confuse the shit out of the Lancers who are trying to get further into the base. They hop on comms and they just start, like, giving false directions and doing false flag, like, you know, spotted, enemy spotted on the east, whatever, whatever, to just send them into a huge amount of confusion. Repair and creature. I think that I'm going to pay those off by saying, like, by instilling all of this confusion, they managed to pull the Lancers into a hull that, like, has an electric field that takes their bikes out. Or, like, the air is thick and it just, like, stalls them out. They can be fixed, but it'll take time. And as they're taking that time, a creature is sent in. The thing I'm imagining here is almost like the way that Daleks look, like, on the inside of their armor. It's really rare to see them. I think that's true of the basilisks, that, like, you rarely see, there are, like, certain just, like, walking nerve systems almost. You don't see them out a lot because they're vulnerable. So of course they're hiding in bodies and machines. But a few of them lope into this room. And this isn't the whole squadron. You know, there was a lot of confusion, so they got separated. There are Lancers who are, like, elsewhere in the base. But this entire squadron of Lancers gets taken over. These, like, weird little nerve system creatures crawl into these stalled bikes and merge the, like, the people who are kneeling beside them to repair them just get, like, merged with the bike, and they create this, like, bastardized version of what the Valiant Lancers are all about by making this weird bike pilot centaur that I think the electric lances are, like, stuck through the bike and the rider to just, like, electrify the entire thing. Fast flying electric lances. It's all of those things, but it's now mushed together. And they're just going to be sent to try and take out some of the other ones who are in the base. I'm so mean. I'm so mean. Why did I do that? I could have just taken an easy victory. Though in that case, I would have lost anyway because of the king. But I would have, it's, you know, I'm like this. I'm just like this. There's nothing to be done about it.
Oh, this must have been bad. Let's check our elements. Ace of clubs. That's the wrong thing. Ace of clubs. Reveal. Three of spades. Weapon. Okay. Yeah, we were ambushed by the reveal of a new weapon. Abysmal. This was a parade of arms. This was a grand new show-off of a great new unit of Avalonian tanks. New models rolled right off of the line, and somehow Basilisk knew about it. They debuted a new weapon. Gosh, is this some kind of... Was this the planet-sized Basilisk from earlier, making its move back onto the stage, revealing it's some kind of orbital laser? It was a small planet, just some kind of a moon, maybe? And it crushes us. That laser strikes across the whole unit. A chain reaction of exploding Avalonian tanks, one and then the other and then the rest. Ammo cooking off on the ones that are barely grazed, still destroying it. A pretty successful ambush. And another successful eradication for Basilisk.
Our final conflict.
We are looking at, as we go into this final conflict zone, a grand total of 10 defeat points, which is pretty bad, and 4 victory points, which would have been good about 4 planets ago. So I'm kind of screwed. But we're going to play this last conflict zone out, just to find out what happens.
Technically, if I pushed or did a desperate stand here, I could lose. We'll see how brave and mean I'm feeling, because I don't have to do it, but I could do it. You know? It's always an option. This conflict is the 4 of diamonds.
Okay. 10th conflict zone is the 7 of diamonds.
And it's the queen of hearts.
This was where they dismantled us. Oh, God.
This is where we found the nest. Pretty menacing.
This is where the ground became a graveyard. Oh. Oh, I think I know what this is. I think the machines have realized our goal. And rather than let us retake the prisoners, they just start killing them. Think then that it's time for the Dragonhawks to swoop in, rush in, use their autocannons on the soldier machines that are mowing through the prisoners, land and load as many as they can, be in as many places as at once as possible as they load up the prisoners while also combating these executioners.
I think if we are stumbling into some kind of a fucked up basilisk nest, I kind of have to send the Emerald Vanguard in there. This is one that happens on foot. Things are looking a little dicey at this point in the war. We don't have a lot of armor left. Kind of got to send the rookies in to do just about anything.
So this is the last conflict zone, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the final crystal. Because, like, I get to, you know, decide how the mission played out after. It could be. I think it's definitely on the way to the final crystal. So who am I going to deploy? The Lancers are kind of, they got some stuff going on. Shadewatch, I think, is still recuperating. The Oathbearers are on the move. I kind of like the Siegewalkers where they are. So I think we're going to bring the Dragonhawks back. The Dragonhawks are moving to defend the final area where the last crystal is.
And our first conflict card is 7 of clubs.
The first conflict resolution card I flipped is an 8 of diamonds. It's right in the middle.
Let's see the resolution cards. First up is 10 of diamonds. This will probably be lower, but this is close to call.
There's no rules against counting cards, and also I'm not good at it, and so it doesn't really give me that much of an advantage. I'm laying out the cards that are above 8 that I've played, and the cards that are below 8 that I've played. Stalemate is also an option. Though, not in this case, because this is my 4th 8. That's funny. Okay.
Luckily, I still haven't used any of my reinforcements.
It doesn't really help. Played 15 cards that are below 8, and 13 cards that are above 8. I've played all my 8s. Let's say it's going to be lower.
And you know what? Let's go for it anyway. I'll make another desperate stand.
I'm not pushing. I've already got my more difficult rules in, so let's go.
it is going to be Loa, and it's going to be Hoth.
So, I'm betting on this being lower. Let's see. Seven of hearts. Don't even need to call in any backup.
Okay, it's a five of clubs. So it's a victory point. See, I'm ultimately nice. I do want them to win. I just want them to suffer on the way there.
And I have flipped over the two of clubs, bringing us to a total of 13 defeat points and four victories. I'm starting to feel like I don't understand cards and any kind of possibility or probability involved with the guessing of cards.
So, 10 of diamonds is burn. 7 of hearts is ship.
So, 8 of diamonds, scale. 5 of clubs, crash. Okay.
So this is bad. 7 of clubs is transport. 2 of clubs is base. Oh, I guess, yeah, we found the nest. And I guess it's less a situation where we found the nest and more a situation where I guess they brought the nest to us.
Burn ship. Oh, this isn't a factory. This is a massive ship. And they don't even need to bother with executing the prisoners, because the open air nature of the prisoner storage means that as the ship takes off, the prisoners will fall to their deaths or freeze in the thinner atmosphere above. And even those who may survive will asphyxiate once they hit space. But that's not what happens.
This is where they dismantled us. And who was it I was sending in? I was sending in the Dragonhawks. Scale and crash. I think the dismantling is the Dragonhawk ship that's in the lead hits an invisible force field, and the metal just starts peeling away from the ship. Alarms go off like crazy, and it's just peeling up like a sunburn. And it does indeed crash. That's a pretty easy conflict card tag to sort of pay off. And the other hawks stop.
The Dragonhawks realize this. They've managed to load on some of the prisoners as the ship begins taking off. Being a crew of pilots and gunnery crews, they recognize what is about to happen. They feel the familiar rumble of engines warming up, preparing to lift off, and they refuse to let that happen. They see the smokestack. It's a vulnerability. It's been a pain in their asses this whole time, blocking sensors and communications to anywhere else not under the umbrella of this smog. But now it will be the basilisk's undoing.
We were supposed to be eradicating the basilisk, but we failed at nearly every step. They've been increasing in power, and we could do nothing about it as they bring the nest here. At our final seat of power, Neo Avalon, lost mission after lost mission after lost mission. There's no one left to stop them.
The Dragonhawks take off those that are not in the process of loading prisoners, and they make missile run after missile run on the smokestack. The smokestack obviously connects to some kind of engine or incinerator, and if that machine is blocked, it will damage the interior of the factory ship to an impossible degree, and so they make it crumble. They batter it. The missiles are not particularly effective. The smokestack, this ship, is armored. It's prepared for space travel, but they're persistent. They unload everything. This is the final assault. They know it. They don't need to hold anything back. All the missiles go out. All the autocannon shells are expended, and they break it. It shatters, and it falls in upon itself. It collapses into the heart of the factory. The dust from the concrete and the steel and whatever other unknown materials that the basilisk uses clog up the machinery within the depths of the factory ship, and a cascade reaction begins. It's happened too fast for the machine to shut itself down. Fires begin spreading throughout the interior of the factory, which causes further cascading damage. Machinery melts. Wiring melts. everything melts. It burns. All the chemicals, all the plastics, all the reclaimed human flesh. It all burns.
The Emerald Vanguard are heroes, as far as anyone is concerned, but they are rookies. We needed something more, and we're never going to get a chance to develop it. This basilisk land, that colossal, planet-sized basilisk, right on our doorstep, in some kind of extra fucked-up version of the Traveler showing up in Destiny. Only it's not here to sponsor people with fancy magical powers, it is here to convert us, it is here to destroy us. And we can't really stop it at this point.
I think the way I'm going to use scale to turn this into a victory is that, like, through experimentation, it becomes obvious that this force field can only target stuff that's big enough. Because, we realize that, the Lancers, for example, on their skimmer bikes have been going back and forth across this area with no problem. And it's only when we tried to bring in a big ship that something happened. And so it is, a force field that is specifically reactive to either, speed, but maybe just size, literally. Maybe it's that, once it covers a certain, surface area, it starts reacting. Not totally sure. It's hard to say without further study, but it basically just becomes okay, if we send a big ship through here, it'll be destroyed. And so we just have to deploy the troops that are on it, that are being transported, see if the missiles that are on the Dragonhawks are small enough to get through properly. And I think they basically are, or it's the type of thing where the missiles are going fast enough that it doesn't matter that they're being dismantled because they're gonna explode anyway. And so it's a little bit more unpredictable, but ultimately can still just the Dragonhawks can be outside of this force field shooting in to help defend, and the troops can be on the ground helping to support. It does mean a lot more of them get taken out, sorry to them, but this is a victory. They managed to hold this area.
The ship manages to rise a couple dozen feet above the ground before it finally gives out, flames erupting from every orifice of this flying building, and it crashes back down into the ground. Some of the prisoners are injured in this rapid descent, but none, or at least very few, die from that crash. The Dragonhawks have already loaded up many of the prisoners. Once they've expended all of their missiles and autocannon ammunition, returning back to the open-air prisons to load more prisoners. And so, it is an unmitigated victory. The only force that took any notable damage throughout this operation was Shade Watch. All the other elements of this force were able to win their conflicts.
And that is the final conflict, so I'm going to go to the aftermath.
After resolving your final conflict, add up your victories and defeats to find out whether you can have battle victory.
More victory points.
Battle defeat.
More defeat points.
Or stalemate.
Same defeat and victory points.
Draw on your mission and narrate how you did or didn't manage to secure your objective.
So we have 8 victories. When I was reading the rules initially, that seemed like a very unlikely outcome. Even with the possibility of using reinforcements to change the second card that is drawn in conflicts. But I didn't even use one of those. I suppose in hindsight, I could have used them to possibly save the 2 Shade Watch teams, but those were both in the first half of the mission, and I wanted to make sure I had them in case I needed them in my pocket.
I'm ending with 8 victory points and 4 defeat points. And my mission was to debilitate, destroy a power source, to weaken the enemy or disrupt the enemy in a way that prevents them from acting or slows them down in the future. And I talked about taking out those 2 weird crystals, those beating hearts in the base, and that there's a 3rd one. And yeah, Basilisk throws a lot at us to stop it. The, Lancer chimeras that it made arrive. I like the idea that Shade Watch appears at the last second to help take them out. They come back into the fight. The handful of Oathbearers that survived managed to get to the crystal. I'm not sure that they survive taking it out because they have to do it slowly. There are so few of them now, but they do take it out. And this base goes dark and flickers. A lot of the enemy troops, shudder to a halt because they're no longer able to draw power. And I think I like the idea that in the wake of this, some of those Lancers who were stuck in the base can in fact find the like network router thing and pull it out and bring it, which might be a bad idea to bring it, but they're gonna do it. But the main mission was just to destroy this power source, and we do that. And this was like a major factory base, you know? They make a lot of troops here, and so hopefully this will slow down their production a bit and give us an edge in the future.
We managed to succeed at this battle for capturing the factory, which turned out to be a factory ship, and saving the prisoners that were being turned into material and grit to be used by the Basilisk. Shadewatch attempted some initial reconnaissance, but were turned into undead that were felled by the Iron Knights, who were then ambushed by gorilla-like machines through a portal. Shadewatch tried to regain their honor by doing additional reconnaissance while the Iron Knights caught their breath, but were unfortunately outmatched by worm machines. Then the Dragonhawks found some outlying prisons and freed the captives there, but cleverly sorted out the infiltrator units among them and gunned those down. In response to that, the machine unleashed its inhuman snipers, attacking from impossible distances. And so the tanks bombarded that area recklessly with rockets, excusing themselves to outlying areas before beginning their attack to avoid causing further damage to the column, with the counter battery failing to do any notable damage to our forces. The Basilisk then sent in the worms, which had proven effective against Shadewatch. But they were not smart enough to avoid the tricks of the Valiant Lancers, who lured them away using drones and skewered them with their weapons. But the machine is ever intelligent, and it surrounds the Lancers with gunships of its own. The Lancers recognize the weaknesses of these gunships, however, and wear them down in a dragged-out chase. Once the gunships were weakened and worn, on the edge of breaking, the Lancers pounced and ripped them piece from piece. Finally, the machines brought out their last line of defense, massive armored scorpions. And while everyone else rearmed and prepared for the final push, the tanks came forward and bombarded these massive metal beasts with their rocket barrages, slamming them into the ground, taking a hammer to them, cracking them, breaking them, and finally destroying them. This opened the way for the Dragonhawks to approach the factory ship and begin loading up the prisoners, which was when the Basilisk revealed that the factory was not just a factory, but a ship, and it planned to escape and take as many of the prisoners with it, literally or to their graves. The Dragonhawks unleashed their full draconic fury, blasting apart that smog stack that had been such a pain in the force's advance, breaking it and impaling the factory ship with its own device, burning it out from the inside, and saving as many of the prisoners as they could, giving humanity a grand victory in this almost hopeless conflict.
Not only did we fail to wipe out Basilisk, they brought the center of their power to our doorstep. They brought us so low that we couldn't do anything to stop them. The slow process of snuffing them out one by one starts right here, Neo Avalon. Which is grim, but that's the way things go sometimes. This is where the stars died, not this is where we, this is where the stars still are because we won.
There is a little section called Campaign Play. Says, "This is where the stars died can be played as a campaign, a series of battles that string together to result in an overall victory or defeat. Campaign consists of three or more battles. Add up victories, defeats, and stalemates as you go to determine the ultimate outcome at the end." And so, theoretically, if I were playing this as in a campaign, like, part of the next thing that we would do is, like, someone back home would be researching this network thing, and we'd maybe do a new mission sort of based off of that and that kind of thing. But that's all theoretical. What really matters is that we did, in fact, debilitate Basilisk here.
And that's our game. It's my playthrough. I did absolutely horrifically garbage. I'm sorry to the forces of Bastion. I'm sorry to the people of Neo Avalon. Couldn't really do anything for you. But maybe next time, hey? You know, you win some, you lose some.
Thank you for listening, audience. I hope you enjoyed this story of the Bastion, humanity's last hope, making an assault, trying to save what few people it could, and actually managing to succeed.
A failed eradication. But once again, a successful eradication for Basilisk, so round of applause for them.
I really want to know if the other commanders fared as well as I did, or if this has turned into a Pyrrhic victory, or even worse, a majority defeat.
Thank you for having me, Seda. Hello. Hi, you might be editing this. How are you doing? I hope you're doing good. I hope you won. I hope you didn't do as terrible as I did. I hope you got more than 4 victory points. Because I sure didn't.
This is a win for Bastion. A bloody, brutal win. But a win.
I gotta say, that was more tense than I thought it was going to be every time I had to draw that second resolution card.
I love this game. This is so fun. It is, like, so different from a space that I normally play in, but God, the just, like, the narrative aspects of it give me as a player so much space to play in it that, like, I feel really almost, like, joyfully welcomed into a genre that I am usually a little bit alienated from, and that is so cool. That is so cool. All of the, like, little tables and pieces of information are wonderful. I love the conflict prompts. Like, this is where this happened is such a cool way to, like, guide the narrative and give it this, like, really interesting sense of inevitability. I love the idea that it's like, yeah, this is where they dismantled us and we won. It's a victory point. So something horrible happened. And of course you can choose, like, do I want to counteract this or did it happen no matter what, but somehow we won. That's so cool. I love playing in the tension of that stuff. That is, like, some of my favorite type of gameplay, so that worked so well for me. And the two different, like, conflict resolution elements, the verb and the noun or whatever it is, amazing, really cool. I love this. It's so flavorful. And yeah, I imagine that, like, for some people there's not quite enough, like, tactical grit to the gameplay of it to satisfy it, but for me, I loved those little moments of tension and the idea of, like, wagering in a game where you're making a bet this is going to be higher or lower, and so therefore it's, like, your fault if it fails is awesome. Was a huge fan of that in Furia, which as I'm recording this is the currently airing series, but is probably a little while ago now. It is really cool. I really liked this. It's nice and short. You can pick it up really quickly. And I love, it says also, like, you want just, like, a skirmish, you want to do a short battle, just do 5 conflict zone with 3 types of troops. Like, so cool as just, like, something that you can do a little bit of or, like, expand on if you like it. I'm really happy with this stuff, you know? What a fun game. That was cool. All right. This is where the stars died. Oh, the title is in the form of one of the conflicts. That's awesome. Cool stuff.
Fingers crossed.
Bye.
This has been Folio, an actual play podcast about solo and otherwise self-paced TTRPGs. To find where you can find the show, check out foliopod.card.co. You can find Austin at Austin Ramsay Games on Blue Sky and Tumblr and listen to her mega game actual play podcast, KalizCon, on YouTube or in your podcatcher of choice. You can find Briar at WhereGazelle.com and RoyalRabbit.itch.io. You can find Seda, who is me, at GayGothVibes.online and follow me on Blue Sky at PosedaChips.GayGothVibes.online. This week, Austin and Briar and I finished our games of This Is Where the Stars Died by Scott Malthouse, found at TrollishDeliverGames.itch.io. Everything I mentioned here is linked, as always, in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. Take care out there. Oh, I forgot to wager. And I saw what it was, so I'm going to shuffle. 9.